Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On this episode, I am joined by the head of the International Player Pathway of the NFL. Hell of a job title. It's the wonderful, the lovely James Cook.
This is the Big Jim Show.
Big Jim is wearing his heels, marching around the town to get some thrills. But it's time to go in now, and he's big and red. A shot of black coffee, now he's super bad. He gets loud. I'm a beer dick owls. I showed him up some whiskey, and he shoots it's like a ball.
James Cook, that's the official...
It is the official name.
The official name. Yeah. And what's the official title, just for the listeners?
So I'm the head of the NFL's International Player Pathway Programme.
Oh, fucking looks good on LinkedIn, that, eh?
Yeah, it does. Does wonders.
It does. And how do you get into a job like that? Because you're a young man. You look a young man. How old are you?
I'm 25.
Very young.
Yeah.
Very young. So you're... Just give us the title again.
Head of the International Player Pathway Programme for the NFL.
Big job.
Yeah. No, it's fun. It's fun. And I think it's kind of a testament to what the international business is for the NFL. It's very, it's young, it's dynamic, it's kind of like a startup within the bigger beast of the NFL. So we get to do really cool, exciting, innovative, creative things like the IPP. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And we might dig more into that, but like getting you in the studio, especially now, and it's all been a bit last minute. You're going away on holiday. I'm meant to be with the family, going away to Centre Parks on holiday. So I'm thankfully in the studio in London. But it's so topical now.
Yeah.
It's just blown up, and we'll get straight into it. And I'm going to ask a load of questions. You can pie me off, you can answer them, but we can just talk about how we've kind of got to this moment. Because Adam Derda was sat in that chair over a year ago, and he was my first experience of talking about the NFL, and he mentioned the International Player Pathway Program, mentioned Jordan Mailata. Have I said that right?
Mailata.
I want to make sure I get it right, because I'd love to have him on someday. And that was my first exposure.
Yeah.
And the reason why I had Adam in was, well, there was an NFL game being played in London. He was the first and the only, I think, the English coach to be
in the NFL. He was the first non-American full-time coach in NFL history.
Which is massive, right?
And he's still the only English one. There's a guy who actually came through our program as a player, Matt Leo, who's with the Eagles right now. But outside of that, they're the only ones I'm aware of. But Matt's Australian, so Adam still has the English flag flying.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
There you go. But having him in was my first exposure and the listeners' exposure to that NFL, but more so now, and we'll get into it. Everyone's talking about IPP, everyone's talking about the Player Pathway Program, Lewis Rees-Zammit. Mental. Did you think when this all started this year that it had the potential to kind of blow up how it has?
Yes and no. I think I always have the idea that it has the potential because I really believe in this program. And like you talk about Adam sitting in this chair, what, a year ago. Fortunately, I keep sitting in the chair that Adam's been sitting in because he founded this program.
Yeah.
So, and he'd say the same thing. I think we've always seen big things for the program. We've always maintained as well that this has never been a find guys and get them on practice squads. The idea is to find genuine stars, people that can actually play and contribute in the NFL. So in that sense, yes, we've always kind of seen people talking about it and wanting to be a part of it. At the same time, I think when Lewis came on board, we didn't, and he said the same thing to me at the time, I don't think we necessarily thought it would blow up as much as it did. Maybe we were naive, but it's been fun nonetheless.
Yeah, it's been wicked. And how does that process work then? So for you, just going back to the basic roles and responsibilities of your job, I'm really interested to hear about how you go from identifying talent to putting them on the program to seeing what we're seeing now where lads are being added to the training.
Yeah, sports. So it's really a year-round process. You're always you're always trying to get out in the world, and whether that's athletes reaching out to us, whether it's us getting in touch with agents, coaches, federations, contacts. Sometimes it's a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy that puts you in touch with somebody. We'll run workouts. In the past, we've had the International Combine. We ran that twice in London, once in Germany, one in Australia. That was our kind of large-scale athlete evaluation showcase. But then we've also done small private workouts. We've met with players all around the world. That's what Jordan was back in the day. It was a meetup with him. So a lot of time on planes, a lot of time running around and trying to find people and looking under rocks and getting a lead and it going dead and getting a lead and it going really well. And then from there, it's summarizing who you found, who you want to work with, who has the traits of what it is we're looking for, offering them an invite onto the program, and then bringing them in for a 3-month training camp in the US, which just ended last week for this year.
Mm. When you say looking under rocks, give me some ideas of how far and wide you go to find them rocks.
So really our remit is everywhere outside of the US and Canada, which is bonkers when you think about it. It's anyone in the world outside of those countries. Mm. One of the guys, I think, who on this year's program is a really good example of it. His name's Byron Matos. He's a former baseball player turned basketball player from the Dominican Republic who made his way over to the US when he was 15, played high school basketball, which turned into playing collegiate basketball, which turned into him walking into a gym one day, and the owner of that gym knew a friend of mine who worked at the Rams, and they spoke, and the guy at the Rams then said to me, "Hey, buddy of mine, huge Dominican kid, just walked into his gym, you should know about it." And that was about 18 months ago. That turned into, how do we get a hold of him? How do we get a contact number? Do we DM him on Instagram, find him, get in touch? That led ultimately to a workout with him in Miami last October, beginning of October. Extended the invite, came on the program, and we're prepping him for the draft in a couple of weeks and hoping that his name gets called. So it goes 0 to 100 quite quickly, but there's a lot of work underneath that goes into that as well.
So cool. I mean, it's like a movie, and we were joking about it, weren't we? Like, yeah. I was watching the basketball one with Adam Sandler. What's it called? Hustler?
Yeah, Hustle.
Hustle,
yeah.
That's the one, watching it, and he goes over to Spain, and he's watching the street basketball, and obviously profiles Bo, gets him over. Is that based on a true story?
I don't actually know, but it definitely resonated. Yeah. I watched that more than once.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah,
so
no,
it definitely did.
So and cool. I think even the story of him going... Like he goes to see someone else, right, in the movie, and then he kind of bumps into Bo playing street basketball. We had a story a few years ago, a German guy by the name of David Bader. He was playing American football, but in Germany, in the German Football League. And Adnan and Will, who were on the program at the time, were watching film of someone else and saw him standing on the sideline. And they were like, who the hell is this? Like, let's try and find out who that guy is. That turned into a workout, which turned into a few years of working with him, developing him. Long story short, he goes to Washington and he played on their active roster about 2 years ago, and he's currently in the NFL. So they do come from the strangest places sometimes.
Yeah, they really do. And I'm not trying to draw a comparison with my skill set and your skill set, but as I was retiring from Saracens, I was coaching some of the younger lads, and we had Ben Earl, who's playing for England, sat in that chair as well, and I coached him. And one thing that I always picked up on, it wasn't about how strong they were or what moments they could do on a rugby field specifically. Yes, that's important, of course. I would always go based on athleticism, and maybe strength is a part of that, but just how they moved off the ball, how they got up off the floor, the body positions that they could get into in rugby, which there's loads of different body positions. And I saw Ben Earl, Nick Azikwe, who plays for England, Maro Itoje, Max Malings, who plays for Bristol in England. And you'd have to write a report and say, like, you know, out of these academy players, who do you think will come through? There was a couple of others. And it was crazy watching how some established coaches would profile players and be like, definitely not. Whereas I'd be like, take the rugby out of it. Like, as 16, 17-year-old young lads, the athleticism they've got is the foundations of being an athlete, like an athlete at the top, top level. And I'm not saying I got it right, but I kind of did get it right with the players that I profiled. Is that your role? So are you going to these places and take out the fact they've never played NFL or they've played a little bit? Are you looking for out and out athletes? Is that the number one?
Yeah, fundamentally it is. It's looking for And that's the way that the game, and we have to be really in tune with what NFL trends are at the moment and the kind of athletes that are playing in the NFL. What would constitute a great athlete in the NFL 20 years ago doesn't stand up now anymore. So being in tune with that, finding pure athleticism, but it comes in lots of different forms. And you also take into account a bunch of things, like you said. So you can have a great athlete who's really, like guys that have come onto our program in the past who are former pros. It's probably going to be marginal gains when it comes to them developing as athletes because they've been in great setups already. But we've also had guys who you see the underlying traits, but like I said, they've walked off the street and they haven't had the access to facilities. And you think, wow, he could be considerably better at just purely as an athlete with us for even a short amount of time. So there's a lot of projection. But yeah, ultimately it is. It's those exceptional athletic qualities that we think translate to the NFL.
Yeah. You see UFC do it really well. They now, because of Khabib Nurmagomedov, they head over to Dazakhstan and these kind of dark Eastern European countries where they wrestle. And you look at the programs they've now got in place because ultimately there's a viable pathway now to be wrestling on the streets of Dazakhstan to being on a roster of the UFC and making millions of pounds. And that's where I'm really interested about this program, not just being a father, but just seeing how this year's acceleration of the program, I knew about it loosely before, like we spoke about. How long has it been running for?
So formally it started in 2017, in the way it is now, but there was some kind of early work going on in 2015, 16, trying to identify athletes as well.
So maybe it's social media, maybe it's just the world that I'm in with Zam and Harry Malander as well, that it does feel like there's an acceleration in this space. But the athletic profiling, when you go, just give us an example of, so yeah, because the NFL, all shapes and sizes, right? So what are you looking for and what kind of age profile as well?
So from an age perspective, it's really 20 to 25. It's that kind of sweet spot. So you're not eligible for the NFL or for this program until you're at least 3 years removed from high school or like an international high school equivalent.
Why is that?
That's just the way that the NFL eligibility rules are built out. And because obviously they're kind of built around the college system in the US. So a lot of players will go from high school to college to the NFL. So it's that there is a certain amount of removal from it. But athletes that come through our program, typically because they have less experience, we see them more as 1, 2, 3 year sometimes projects. So you don't want to put necessarily a 28-year-old player into the program because by the time they're viable for an NFL team, they're 31. And in the NFL, that's in your later years. So you want to trend as young as possible. And then when it comes to the physical attributes, we try and boil it down to speed and length. They're the traits that transfer. And that's what ultimately the NFL is starting to put out. And what you see a lot in today's NFL, the players that are out there, it's unbelievably fast, whatever position you're playing. And increasingly, these players are starting to look like NBA players. They're big, long, athletic. They can jump, they can run. And so we need to reflect that with the work that we're doing and the athletes that we're finding.
Yeah. When you say length, would you jumping?
So length as in...
Or height.
Height, but also arm length is something that's kind of unique to this sport in that there's a lot of close hand-to-hand combat going on, particularly around the line of scrimmage and the bigger bodies up front. And if my arm is longer than yours, you're just going to have a hard time trying to get hands on me and try and block me or take me out of a play or... And it's actually a massive advantage. So it's something that very... And it's kind of weird. Like, we have a player that has long arms.
I've got long arms.
There you go. Well, scouts sit up in their chairs and they see that kind of thing, you know?
Really?
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
That's a real thing. And there's a lot of personnel people and scouts and who would say, yeah, if your arm is less than 32 inches, you're going to struggle to play close to the line of scrimmage in the NFL. Because just... people getting on you and trying to get on and off of people is a skill that you need to have, and having real length, arm length, helps with that.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's very niche. It's very niche.
Niche. Sorry, that's one. It's not crazy. Niche.
It's crazy as well.
Is the one.
It's niche.
So will you be like literally going around with the tape measure, just being like, right, hold your arms out. Let's just have a quick look.
Yeah, hand, arm, wingspan. That's sort of a staple in an NFL workout. They do all of those things at the NFL Combine every year. And with some positions, they mean more than others. Like I said, those bigger guys up front, all that close hand-to-hand work, that is something that people will look at. And you can have a red flag if a guy has a short arm. Does it translate every time to a great player? No, of course it doesn't. There's people that supersede those rules, but it's something that is at least looked at.
Yeah. And what else? So the speed has clearly always been a thing. And that's where it's like the 100-meter sprint, isn't it? In the Olympics, everyone's drawn to fast human beings, but it was watching Lewis Rees-Sammit do the 40-yard dash, mm-hmm. right, saying 40-yard
yeah,
dash.
40 yards, yeah.
Right, I've got the terminology right. But watching it on social media and trying to work out, like, was that quick? It seems quick. It was 4.443. Yeah. I was like, that's quick. And then you look at the it's like, well, no, someone's run a 4.31 or... I was like, that's not that much difference. But you talk in these kind of microseconds, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And also speed as a concept, you can break that down even further. A guy can have long speed. He can have great quickness laterally. He can have great acceleration. You know, you can break it down again and again and again. And 4.43 is exceptionally fast. Like, Lewis has world-class speed, whatever sport he's playing. But I think what is so enticing to teams is you've got that speed that you very clearly put on display with exceptional ball carrier instincts, acceleration, agility that he's already banked with the years of rugby film that he already has that you could see. So you break that down again, and speed isn't the same with everyone. It comes in different forms. But he was plenty fast enough. I told him that on the day as well. He wanted to run faster, but he always wants to run faster.
Let's get into that. Let's get into Lewis Rees-Sammit then, because he is the high profile player that we're talking about here. It's the one that the audience want to hear about. So he was fast that day. Yeah. And is that the fastest that he has, like, you know, you'll obviously be training for that. He'll be clocking up times in training. Yeah. Had he run faster?
We did have him in the 4.3s in training at times. We actually, he hit a top speed during our 10-week camp at 23.6 mile an hour during one of our practices, which is nuts.
Like, where would that rank compared to some of the guys playing?
I mean, very few players in the NFL are hitting 23 mile an hour. The top, the most elite names that are known for their speed might get in the 23s. I mean, it was documented that Lewis hit 24.2, I think, when he played Fiji last year.
Yeah, that's done the rounds.
Yeah, so...
And so the NFL are privy to that, right? So they're not going based on that one 40-metre dash. They'll have access
exactly.
to
and
the data.
We had 10 weeks worth of GPS data on him as well that we shared with clubs, and we told him, you know, and I think you just need to turn on the rugby film. And even I spoke to a lot of American scouts and personnel people who don't know anything about rugby, but you can watch Lewis Rees-Sammit's film and tell that he's fast and tell that he's good, he's handy with the ball in his hands. So that translates. Of course it does.
Yeah. And what else did he impress on? Because I saw the one, the agility one where...
Yeah, he ran the... So there's two agility drills that we do at our pro day. It's the 5-10-5, which is also known as short shuttle, and there's a 3-cone drill. And he tested well in those, but I think the big thing that he really showed, I think teams that were aware of him coming into that workout were, they'd all see, a lot of them had seen the rugby film. I had a few teams call me and say, yeah, we've already watched X number of games, Welsh rugby games. We've
really?
Watched this film. Yeah, there was a lot of that. And they said that, really, I think from a team perspective, they needed to, one, verify that he was fast, which he did immediately, but they knew that from the film. But what a lot of teams do is they'll watch the film and then they need to get a 40 time to verify what's the speed of the rest of the players that he's playing against. You know, because if he's outrunning everyone on the rugby film that he's looking at, but everyone on the rugby film only runs 4.8, then he might only be a 4.6 40 runner. But I think when he showed up at the pro day and he ran the time he did, everyone was like, okay, yeah, that stands up. That's exactly what we need to see. And credit to the coaches that worked with him on the IPP when he did his position drills, which was running routes, catching the ball, doing the actual position-specific drills that he'd been preparing for, he was much more polished than people thought he'd be. He caught the ball better, he ran better, he had a better understanding of the game than people thought. And I think just coming off the back of that workout, everyone was like, right, we now know the athlete and we are more excited for the potential football player than we originally thought we'd be. And it was a great recipe for him, and look where he is now.
Yeah, well, you would have known about that as well because his dad's interest as well in American football and also him watching, because that's a big part of it. You need to understand it to a degree. Do you know what I mean? You don't just go in as a raw athlete. You might have run a 4.18, like the record.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't understand his way around, is that just as important, do you think? Do you think that's given him an advantage that he does understand?
Oh, yeah, massively. And it's more so, it's playing a long game as well, because he can show up and he can blow up a pro day workout and a team can get interested and they sign him. But if he has absolutely no understanding of what happens next, he's just not going to be there long. And our measure of success isn't this point, although we're very happy right now and it's great news. We want him to go on and have a 10-plus year career in the NFL. That's the goal, ultimately, is him to be a contributor for the Chiefs for a very long time. And so the more he understands the game, the better he understands the game at a high level, is what's going to help him in the next bit, which is what we were trying to help prep him for.
Yeah, because it's on a knife edge, like watching that, especially with them being such conditioned athletes and speed, like your hamstrings tighten up, you know, like your calf, like if you're, and he's had them issues, like that's what happens when you play rugby week in, week out. Like how difficult is it from your point of view getting them ready for that kind of showcase moment where the world is watching, the teams are watching? Because we're talking about them moments there. There's millions of pounds on the line. Like there is that. The only thing I can compare it to is what they do in the football academies, the soccer academies here.
Yeah.
You know, they put them in at such a young age and, you know, go on, 8-year-old kid, you go and perform. I'm begging you, please, as a parent, I'm begging you, because you do that, there's a good chance mum and dad can buy a house. Like these are multi-million pound athletes that we're talking about here. The pressure on them day, how do you deal with that with the young men?
I think you just want them to lean into that pressure and you really want them to embrace it because it's not going to go away. And we had them out in mid-January, we started our camp, and then it was actually in halfway through week 9 was the pro day. So it was really like 8 full weeks to prep for that. And then within that, you have a taper, you have times where you scale down the training. And that was a real theme, certainly for me, that I wanted to do with this year's program was, we use this word uncommon with the guys, and how to be in the program to begin with, you have to be uncommon. They have these athletic characteristics that just everyone in the world doesn't have, but that got you here. So embrace it and want to be like that and embrace this idea of being different. Because when you go to the NFL and you go to the next level, like there's no one from Cardiff at the Kansas City Chiefs, no players, no staff, no coaches, no trainers, anything. And so Lewis is by default, as are the rest of our players, they're outliers. And that's good. Embrace that. And I think that that idea of being uncommon and being different and embracing that, I think that does help us with approaching big moments like that. Because then we can say to the guys, this is what we're here for. This is who we are. This is part of our DNA, being on the IPP as an athlete, or even for the rest of the coaches that were on the IPP as well.
It's unapologetic.
Yeah, absolutely.
About doing that, which
absolutely
is so out with society. Do you know what I mean? As in everything you're looking at. And it's really interesting. I go back to, I'm an outlier. I just am as a human, aesthetically. And I talk about the kids and I look at the way they are. I've got 4. That's why I say they. And a couple of the kids are outliers. And I can see that. And it's like, how do you channel them being an outlier, not fitting into what's seen as normal society, an academic program, which we obviously know is important. And how do you really double down on like that athleticism, not just with my kids, making out like my kids are going to be like Mike Tyson or LeBron James. I'm not saying that, but it's how the NFL see value in that, as in you as a scout see value in that. Whereas in rugby, it's not, you fall in line. There is that same kind of societal pressure. If you are different, if you're a bit quirky, ADHD, autism, you don't fit into that kind of team environment, you become an outlier and you don't become part of the team. Whereas actually, you're doubling down and narrowing in on that individuality.
Yeah, and it comes in different forms. I think we want to communicate to the players that the guy that stays late after practice and does extras is uncommon because no one else is doing it. The others aren't doing it. The guy that asks extra questions, that spends extra time in his notebook at the end of the day, the guy that, all of those things. And then also we want to get them to have the message of, to be an international player in this league and to do well is to be uncommon. You have to be uncommon, and this is the life you signed up for. You can't choose to live this life and do this thing and try and achieve this great thing and just be like everyone else and just try, and you can't even try and be like the rest of the Americans trying to do it, because they have this unbelievable advantage over you because they've grown up in the system. So embrace that, because that's what it's going to look like, and that's such a wonderful thing. And I guess to your point, like, that does create this narrative of celebrating difference, which again is a fantastic thing. And I think our players really wrapped their arms around it, and it was cool, and it was really good to see. And then when you get to a pro day and the day that we had at USF where Lewis ran and did all of those things, as did the other players, I think they had fun with it, and that alleviates some of the pressure as well.
Yeah, just following the stuff. Is it Coach Steve?
Steve Hagan.
Yes, I follow him now. I've been messaging him back and forth as well.
Good.
I'm loving it, because what I realised, not that I didn't think it was the case, because I almost thought, right, you're going in there as an individual, you're competing against the other lads that are in the programme, but it didn't seem like that, as in there was this kind of brotherhood that you saw, like a team, that we are the outliers, we've coming in from all walks of life and we haven't come through the system. How many lads were in that group? How many coaches? What's the makeup of the IPP program?
So athletes, we had 15. And then coaches, we had, so it was myself, Dom and George, who are kind of just sort of running the show and doing a mixture of things. And then we also brought on additional coaches in Roy, Ben, Ashley, Steve, Coach Dunn. So an additional five. So it's not a big group. It's not a big group of people, but we are with each other every second of the day. And that brotherhood, that togetherness, it's funny. It never takes much to get them to that point. They quite quickly want that because it's hard. Like, it's really difficult. And anyone, any of our players that have come through will say the same thing. It's a really difficult experience out there. And it's designed to be. It's supposed to be. And I think you do... People choose to lean on each other to get through that. And then as a result, they end up getting better. And I think going back to Lewis as an example, strategically, his roommate was a receiver by the name of Praise Olotoke, who, again, wild story, born in Lagos, moved to Glasgow, grew up in Scotland, went on a track and field scholarship. He was a 100-meter, 200-meter runner to Canada, ended up at Ohio State University. And we roomed them together because Lewis is known for his speed and that's something. And as is Praise, he's coming from a 100-meter background. And I said to them the first weekend, I said, you might not be the fastest person here and your roommate might be the one that's going to... It might be the fastest person here.
Mm.
So that bred a lot of competition in a really healthy way. And then by the end of the camp, those two were inseparable. They were really close friends and got on really well. And looking back on it, that definitely helped them in their own journeys. I think they learned a lot from each other because of it as well.
Mate, this is so cool. Give me some more stories from that group of 15.
I think a great story is a guy whose name we're hoping to hear a little bit more of in the next couple of weeks, Travis Clayton. So a lot of our players, they come from former professional backgrounds or they come from collegiate backgrounds in the US and they're used to a certain level of facilities and sport and competing at a certain level. Travis, the thing I keep saying about him is he basically walked off the street into this thing. He's playing for Basingstoke Rugby Club, amateur rugby, but throughout his youth, he boxed for a little bit. He did, he played a lot of football. He also went in through an Olympic talent identification program and was recommended that he do skeleton, which he didn't really entertain at the time. But he's just a really good athlete that's just gone through lots of different sports, but never really found his home. And Travis came onto our program this year. We knew about Travis because he was at the NFL Academy where Coach Hagen coaches for a little bit of time. And he was finally age eligible for this. So we brought him on. And there's somewhat of a gamble with someone like that because you've got to help them on their journey to becoming a professional before they can become a professional athlete and everything else. So there's so many things they have to learn. But Travis came on and he just bought in from day one. He knew he wanted this. He knew he wanted to be a pro athlete and it hasn't really worked out in other ways. And this was his chance to do it. And Travis stole the show at the pro day. He's a little over 6'7".
He's 6'7".
A little over 300 pounds, which, apologies, I don't know what the stone conversion is on that one. But
yeah.
A little over 300 pounds. He's a big man.
Mm.
And he ran 4.7 in his 40-yard dash, which would have comfortably been the fastest time at the NFL Combine, where all the best collegiate athletes go year on year. And the collective reception from the teams was, who is this? Where
Holy
did this
shit.
Come from?
So cool.
And Trav he's back home now in the UK. In a couple of days' time, he'll start a number of different team visits. He's going to be flying all over the US. I'll go back to Florida with him next week to continue some training and prep ahead of the draft. And we're hoping we'll get some good news in the next couple of weeks. But I think that's what captures the imagination, I think, with this program. And you've got Lewis and Harry and stories like that are great and they're recognisable names. But the beauty is when somebody comes from complete obscurity and can come into this program and all of a sudden flourish and thrive. And I think Travis is a different man than the one that walked in to our camp 11 weeks ago. And we're so proud of him for it. And I think this is only the beginning for him.
Goosebumps. This is why I wanted to chat to you. It wasn't just about Zam.
Yeah, good.
And asking about Harry and the stuff that we've seen online because, like, these are Hollywood stories.
Mm.
I say Hollywood as if Hollywood's the greatest, but I'm not. These are stories that you know, and people listening to this and you think about the touch points of an athlete's life, right? That it isn't all in a straight line. It's not all glory.
No, absolutely.
You know, and like now, I'm desperate for Travis to go all the way. I'm going to go and follow him. I want to hear, you know, I want to see how he's managed to do that. I think there was another couple of other stories. A lot of Irish lads
yeah,
in there as well.
Let's jump into the Irish guys. So this is actually the first year we've worked with kickers and punters. Obviously a very specialist
That's niche.
Position. Very niche. We've never done it before. The idea in the early days of the IPP was that every other position, what we call position players, just moved the needle a little bit more, and there was kind of an emergence of international kickers anyway in the league. But we really wanted to go in all in this year and expand the program, and so we opened up for kickers and punters. And so it was, in many ways, it was a pilot year to see how we would work with that position and where that talent would come from. And we worked with, and I got introduced to a man by the name of Ty Gleeder, who does, he's Irish himself. He wanted to kick in the NFL and it didn't work out. He ended up kicking in the Canadian Football League and he kicked in Europe a little bit. Former rugby player. But then he just started coaching kids how to kick in American football in Ireland. And so we got connected and we started talking about it and where we start. And he, obviously, because it's what he knew, said, I think Gaelic football is where we need to start. It's from, as far as we're aware, the only sport in the world where you kick a ball straight from the grass between posts. Obviously in rugby, you've always got a tee. And so, right, let's start there. So we got a small group of players together. We did a little kind of pilot workout and met with some other athletes as well. It's where we got introduced to Harry Mallander. And we ran a workout and, they could hit the ball. They could hit the ball really well. And it's a different style of kick. There are different mechanics involved. A big part of kicking in the NFL is timing, because there are people trying to get you as soon as you've got the ball and you're trying to kick it. So the time that you get the ball off in is really important. And one of the names that came through that we worked with and we've loved working with him, he's done an amazing job, is Rory Began, who played for Monaghan in the GAA, played for his county. Big name in that sport, very high profile, a history of performing under pressure, which again helps if you're going to be the guy who's going to kick the game winner. And Rory came into our camp and, as expected, was a pro's pro, really loved and just thrived in an environment where he got to just focus on his craft every day. Because for those who don't know, Gaelic football is also an amateur sport. So they're playing in front of 80,000 people, but they're not getting paid. So they've got other jobs during the day. So Rory loved waking up every day and just have to focus on his game. So it was fun. And he did great. And at our pro day, we had a 10 kick set. They kicked 10 different field goals from different distances and directions. And he went 10 for 10 and just looked super comfortable doing it. And I think it's really certainly opened my eyes, and I hope a lot of other people's, that there's a potentially a country full of talent that can translate to this position and hopefully others as well.
You know, when you speak about it out loud, are you like, it's actually really cool?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, no, it is. Yeah. It is. And the more people we get to share it with, the better, I think.
Yeah.
And what we've always maintained and what is absolutely evident is that the players drive this forward. The players make this happen for all of us, because once they go to this next bit, there's nothing we can do. And the teams, and believe me when I say, the teams aren't trying to do this just for the sake of doing it. They're only wanting to sign our players if they think they can actually help them win games.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? Like, a lot of, and the NFL do it so well, the PR around it. And I was, again, batting off a few people on social media when I was talking about how positive it is for Lewis Rees-Hammond, not just him financially, etc., rugby, the profile, the crossover. And people are like, oh, it's a PR. And I was like, what? The Kansas City Chiefs need more PR,
yeah,
do they?
Yeah.
The most talked about team in the world,
yeah,
in sport. Like, they're the most valuable brand at the minute in the world. They don't need to add to that.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Albeit they have. So with Zam going through that, maybe we'll get into that, of how, so he comes out of the what do you call it, the day?
The pro day.
The pro day. So he comes out of the pro day and then he's happy-ish. You have a review with all the players. Like, how does that work? Like, how do you measure success from that?
So in terms of like individual performances, you have ideas of how you'd like the guys to test on the drills. And so you've got, that's pretty measurable. Like we wanted the guys to run this fast and they did, or they didn't. And then in the position drills, you just, it's more of a, how do we want them to present? What do we want them to do well? Like, you don't want Lewis to go into the drills and drop every ball, obviously. So you have a really good sense of how a guy did. And genuinely, coming out of that workout, I feel like the entire class really put their best foot forward and they were so ready for that moment. And in the days leading up to it, I was saying, my big message to the players was, you're more ready for this than you think you are. You know, trust it. Trust that everything we've been doing is getting you ready for this. And I think that showed on the day. That was the 20th of March. On the 21st of March, any of our players that were free agents, of which Lewis was one of them, basically free agency kind of opened. So they could talk to teams. Teams could bring them into their buildings. They could visit with them. They could start those sort of talks and checks. And the big outlying one for a club, when they want to look at a player, is they've got to bring them in and do a physical. They've got to make sure there's no concerns with injury, that kind of stuff. And so Lewis had a number of team visits lined up, Kansas City being one of them.
So the day after. So you've done the training day. You're back at the hotel,
mm-hmm.
and are you waiting? Who gets that call? Does a call come into you?
Mostly it's coming through me.
Coming through you?
Yeah, from the teams.
Yeah.
In Lewis's case specifically, we got back to IMG, our training base, the evening of the 20th, and at, I think it was 2:45 a.m. the next morning, we drove him to the airport for his first visit. So he didn't have long to breathe, really.
Mm.
And then he hit a couple of visits, and of one of them being Kansas.
Are you allowed to say where the other ones were or not? Or is that confidential?
It's public knowledge. He went to Cleveland and to the Jets first. So then he had a number of others that after Kansas City he didn't take. But he went, and to credit to the Chiefs, they were, Coach Andy Reid, the head coach, was texting him, calling him, the general manager, Brett Veach, texting
Holy
him,
shit.
Calling him. I've got the scouts calling me, asking me, you know, what is important to him? You know, what is important to him in choosing a location to go to? And when you see that kind of buy-in from the club, you know that they're serious
proper.
About it. Yeah,
that's not PR. That's
no, the, and that. And the GM said to Lewis, he said, Coach Reid doesn't call everyone. He doesn't even call everyone on their 90-man roster as they go into training camp. So believe that we're all in on this and we're committed to you. And that was Lewis's big thing from the beginning, is he wanted to go somewhere where they had a plan for him, where they could see him being a contributor in X number of years, and they were able to lay out a blueprint of how they were going to get there. And I think he's fallen into a great spot, into a really good position. And he really took his time over it, and he weighed up a lot of options, and we had a lot of really good conversations. And then when he ended up settling there, and obviously the news broke last week, I think we were all over the moon. And I think the more we talk about it, the more I hear from him, the more I hear from the team, the more excited I get about the match that we got there.
So cool. So I'm going to keep asking questions. So that call comes through at 2:45 in the morning. Oh no, he's off on 2:45.
Yeah, we left the airport then.
How does all that look? So like just a normal commercial plane? Like how does all that work?
The team just books a flight on a commercial plane. They send me the itinerary. They apologised in advance that it was an early one. And they actually gave us the option of postponing it or doing it another time. But
you're like, no, let's go.
Well, no, me and Lewis said that. We said we didn't come this far just to come this far. Like, I'll get up at 2 a.m. if it... we didn't do all this work just to say, you know, it's a bit early. Like, I'm not going to... So we got him on that flight. It was like dropping the kid off at school sort of thing.
Was he? So he was just buzzing.
Well, so because it was such an early one, we did it as a team. So myself, Dom and George, who work in my team, three of us got in the car with him, drove him up to Tampa, dropped him at the curb, wish him luck, told him to text us when he lands, all that kind of stuff. And he went and he did his trip and handled it really well. It was a difficult, busy couple of days for him, for sure.
And do they do that testing there, or is it more medical?
It's kind of at the team's discretion. If they want to do additional testing, they can. The pro day is a great chance to get that anyway. And so we had a huge turnout from scouts there. They had a lot. But that's a really good opportunity for them to do the medical, to meet with the position coach that will be working with him. It's a very specialist sport, so every position has their own coach, often two, sometimes three. And so he would meet with the position coaches. They can get a feel with him. They might even get him up on a whiteboard and talk X's and O's and the strategy of the game. And I had a number of teams text me or call me afterwards and say, yeah, we were actually really blown away. He knew way more than we thought he did.
Mm.
He knew way more because Lewis came into this. Yes, his dad played the game. He was a fan of the game. But that's what he was. He looked at the game through a fan's lens. And you'll know this from rugby, a fan's lens and a player or a coach's lens are wildly different things. Mm. So he really had to learn so much. And so to hear that from the clubs was very, it was really validating, I think, to hear that he's gone in and he sounds like a football player. He sounds like he knows what he's doing and what he's talking about.
With the medicals that they do, how in-depth do they go? Because, again, rumours of years gone by is like when the NFL profile players, they look at their parents, they look at like history of like knee injuries or, I don't know, autoimmune disease and these different things like heart defects in grandparents, dementia, and they go as far back. And is that true or not?
So they'll get like a medical history. Sometimes that's reported from the player. They can also reach out to, we call them athletic trainers, but our physio that was on site at IMG, they can use them as a resource as well for additional stuff. And sometimes it's a hands-on assessment, so they can feel like the knee or various ligaments and see if there's anything they should be concerned over. Then some will do actual imaging. They'll get MRIs done and just have a look at things like that. But if an athlete has a clean bill of health, it can be a very simple process.
Yeah. And that happens, you do your medical. Mm-hmm. Who does the negotiation? How do you put a value on a player? Because I imagine someone like Zam, say he's on, what I like about the NFL and American sports and football is they're transparent on salary. So I don't know how transparent you want to be, but it'd be good to see if we could get into a bit of detail about to give the listeners context of the size of the opportunity. Say Lewis Rees-Zammit's on 250, 300 grand playing on the wing at Gloucester. Okay. How do you then negotiate a deal? Is there a value on an IPP player? Is it valued on position?
So it depends where they are. So Lewis is effectively what we call an undrafted free agent. He's a rookie player entering the league for his first time. And so there are really like bands of where he's going to hit that teams aren't really going to go above or beyond.
What are the bands?
Teams. So I think the latest collective bargaining agreement, like a standard 3-year deal. If you're on the active roster, and we can get into that, there's active roster, there's practice squad. But if you're on active roster, I think year one is something just under, something around 800K. Then year two is a little...
Is that pound or dollar?
Dollars.
Dollars.
Year two is a little over 9, and year three is a little over 1 million. That's, I guess, kind of standard. You're sort of talking around those numbers. But then within that, teams can offer certain levels of guaranteed money in the first year. So you'll earn this, but we'll guarantee you this much, or there'll be this amount of signing bonus. And I wouldn't get into the details of Lewis's, but there's some room to maneuver within that. A player in his situation, there's not tons of room. And then as a player is more seasoned, maybe they're in year 4, year 5, they're looking to sign that second contract, then the numbers can go a bit crazy. And we had that with Jordan Mailata, who was on the program, IPP class of 18, was with the Eagles, kind of saw out his rookie deal. It was then an opportunity to extend, and he ended up signing 4 years, $64 million.
$64 million.
And he's really, he may be up for an extension in the relatively near future. We'll see how it goes. He's one of the premium players at his position now.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of depends on this, depends on that when it comes to those salary things. But yeah, and then Lewis has an agent as well that helps him with those.
Yeah. And so, I mean, how do they put value? I know he's with Roc Nation now, so they might have different valuations.
Yep.
I don't know, have they got any NFL players on
Roc Nation?
Yeah, they have
an NFL wing. Yeah, they've got a lot.
They're
of
all right then.
Yeah,
they know they're,
yeah, he's
they
in good
the
hands.
Value.
Yeah.
What next for him then? And I kind of know, but I'm more so for you to say, like, I'm, you know, chatting to Sam, messaging mates and stuff like that, but just for the listeners and for people thinking, well, he's not got a chance because he's in a 90-man squad, he can get cut at any point. What's
so
next?
He'll head back. He'll head up to Kansas City around the 15th of April. So in the next 10 days, something, he wants to get out there. He'll then go into what is called kind of phase one off-season activities, which is just a lot of running, strength and conditioning. There's not a lot of football activities going on at that point. He'll then, that'll go sort of through the draft. And then it's the draft is in late April. And then it's either the first or the second week after the draft. Weekend after they have rookie minicamp, which is his first opportunity to get in there with all the rest of the rookies and start to get embedded into football activities, starting to understand how the team operates, the playbook, things like that. And then over the coming months, that will turn into OTAs, which is, again, the kind of the vets will come in and that will be more full team activities. They'll then have, there's about a month over the summer they have off, And then as soon as they come back after that month in mid-July, they'll hit training camp, which is about 3 weeks, pretty intense, full padded practices. That's the real, that's where the fire is hottest during the NFL offseason, which will go into NFL preseason, which are the kind of exhibition games where they get to get a lot of guys at the bottom of the roster some game time. So we're hoping to see Lewis appear more in those. And then at the end of preseason, the teams will say, this is my active roster, my 53-man active roster. This is my practice squad, and this is what we're going forward with. And then beginning of September, the NFL regular season starts and the whole thing goes again.
Mm. And then so how many are split into that, into active
so
training?
So 53 on the active roster is a 16-man practice squad. And then as of this year, new NFL ruling is that a team are allowed a 17th player on their practice squad if they are an international player, if they're foreign, if they meet the criteria for an international player, which of course Lewis does. Now, Lewis doesn't have to sit there. The Chiefs can put him straight onto the active roster. They could also stash him on the practice squad for a bit, developing more and with eyes to put him up to active later on. We'll see. There's a lot that can happen between now and then. Like in any sport, injury could open up opportunities for him. It might not. So we'll see. But there are options there for him.
What if he doesn't make the practice roster?
Very unlikely. But if he wasn't to make the active roster, he'd be an available free agent for someone else to come sign him.
Mm. Because there's a lot of movement, isn't there? Again, only going based on Hard Knocks that I used to watch. You know, you see them packing the bags, like they're traded.
They can go anytime.
A lot.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So those are kind of, that's how the mechanics of the roster will work for him.
Mm. Is there a percentage, like there is in these football academies with these 8-10-year-old kids, how you'll measure success? Because you are very new. When you talk about Jordan, that's a success story in itself, and Adam in himself. I suppose it's successful, like the fact that everyone's talking about Zam as well. But out of the 15, like, is there a kind of calculation, like one out of every 2-3 years that goes on to have, I don't know, a 2-3 year career in the NFL? Like, how do you measure success in this? I know it's a throwaway question.
Yeah. So we don't have like a number in terms of this is exactly what we're looking for. Our aspirations running the program is that we want to produce active NFL players. Guys on practice squads is great, but that's not why we're here. That's not why this thing exists. What we have observed since 2017, in 2017, 18, 19, 20, and 21, each of those IPP classes have all produced an active NFL player, which when you look back on it in terms of the numbers of players we're putting into the program and the number of players that are coming out of active players is actually a pretty high percentage when you think of the turnover in the NFL. Now, that's something that we just sort of looked back on last year and we were like, wow, that's actually happened. And then the class of 22 and the class of 23 currently have players on practice squads around the NFL that I personally think have a real chance of making an active roster if it's not this year in the next few years. So that sort of one player per year thing, it's not something that we set out and said, this is what we're trying to do, but it is something that looking back, we have been doing. So I think now looking forward, we have to try and beat that. We have to try and do that more often, and we have to try and do better and improve the quality of the athletes that are coming in. And the feedback that I've been getting from clubs is this thing has got better every year. And Pro Day on March 20th was fantastic for all of us because we were watching it and had all these people coming up and saying, yeah, this is the best group we've ever seen come through the IPP. So sets a really high standard for class of 25, but that's exactly where we want to be.
So in the middle of it now, how much time do the teams have? And out of that 15, how much interest is in that? You mentioned Travis and a couple of
others
as well.
Yeah, so there's probably four or five other players right now that are talking to teams. And then what we will do as well is, like I said before, the draft is at the end of April, the NFL draft, which is where the best college players are coming into the NFL. That will end, and then immediately following the draft, you have what's called undrafted free agency. So it's all those players that weren't picked and teams sort of scrabbling to get the best ones of those. That'll be a good chance for us to regroup and think, right, where are we at? Because we might have a player who hasn't been speaking to any clubs. Suddenly the draft ends and the draft is like, and a team says, well, that guy from the IPP is still available. Let's go after him. So it's a process that's going to take a couple of weeks and months before we really know where the class of 24 sits. So hoping for just more and more good news as the weeks go on.
It's controlled chaos, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the whole build, it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like that whole, the jeopardy, the waiting, the travelling, the glitz and the glamour, like who's next, who's getting picked up, the beauty of the draft.
Yeah.
What happens if none of them get, so the 15, so 10 of them, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Is there another opportunity for them to come back next year, or is it just 1 year, just one shot?
So we're not capped at 1 year. We do have a history of bringing players back, and we have had guys who have, it's not worked from the first year, they've come back and they've made it on a team the second year. Now, any players leaving this year's programme without that opportunity, we obviously can't guarantee them anything. I don't know what the next... We can barely tell what the next 3 months, 2 months are going to hold, let alone the next 12. But we can definitely stay in touch with those guys. And I think, and it's a hard thing to balance, but I think the beauty of the program as well is that when you live with these guys for 3 months and you go through this journey with them and you go from them just being this unknown to coming on the program to just growing as an athlete, as a person, as a man, and then you get to the end of it, you're so invested in the human. We never just like... cut it off and, you know, say, "Can you're done here, we're going on to the next one." It's that's the thing that we always have to remember. These are real human lives at the heart of this, and we want to make sure we're doing right by them and supporting them as best as possible. And I'd love for the longer this to go on for, if it doesn't work out for a player, maybe they're the next coach. You know, you reference Adden. There's not enough international coaches in the NFL. There should be more. Could that be an IPP guy that just didn't quite make the cut, but he has a great understanding of the game and he'd be an unbelievable ambassador for our sport? So I'm hopeful that those will come around as well.
Let's manage expectation. Okay. So dream scenario. No, let's manage expectation, then we'll do dream scenario.
Okay.
How does it unfold for Lewis? Like realistically, if you were to follow like the pathway program of him in there now.
I think Lewis is a really, really good a really good chance of being a contributing player for that team, whether it's this year or in future years. I think that's shown by the interest that the team has shown and the investment they've made in wanting to bring him in. That, like you said, it doesn't just happen. People aren't doing that for bad reasons, you know. And I say that we all know him as the athlete. It's well noted how good of an athlete he is, and that's shown. But it was such an honour to see him go to work every day, because he was relentless and he's so detail-oriented and he's so focused and he asked great questions and he bought into the messaging that we had and he wanted to be a part of the programme and he wanted to help others. And for all those reasons, I feel really hopeful for him. Dream scenario, of course, is that he's an active contributing starting player for the Kansas City Chiefs and they go on to do a three-peat, win three in a row, right? Why not? And he's a part of that team. But I feel I have absolute faith in what we've done with him, the work that the coaches have done with him, that the IPP has done with him, and so encouraged by the person that Lewis is, that why not? I think that's what this program's all about, is asking why not.
Yeah. And what would be a Hollywood story? Like him going all the way to a Super Bowl. I mean, that's an unrealistic story to go from where he is now to getting there and playing.
Or not?
Is it not unrealistic?
Jordan Mailata was a rugby player back in 2018. In less than 3 months, he was an NFL draft pick. He went to the Philadelphia Eagles. He was a starting player in last year's Super Bowl. Like, it's already happened. And that's the beauty of where we have the program in 2024, is you can't tell me it can't be done, because I've watched it happen. I've seen it happen. And more importantly, like, Jordan came and spent 3 days with our guys this year. He came back to our training camp and spent 3 days with him on the whiteboard, in the classroom, on the practice field, in the weight room. So him coming back, it's that living evidence right in front of us that it can happen. So of course it can. I think the dream scenario, though, is that not only does that happen, but it inspires countless others to then want to do it as well. And countless other kids that maybe think, oh, maybe I can do that. And they go and they want to join Steve Hagan at the NFL Academy. And they're 16 years old and they want to go and try this for themselves. And what a great gift to give a person, to inspire them to try something different.
No, it really is. An opportunity that, I mean, I didn't even know existed.
Yeah.
Until a year ago with Adden in there. What position for Lewis has that been nailed down?
I wouldn't say it's been nailed down. So I had this question a lot. He's listed as a running back slash wide receiver. I think the beauty of the way the game is being played and the timing that Lewis is doing this at, there's this real trend in the NFL right now of what we call positionless football. They're much less, you fit in this box, you fit in this box, you fit in this box, and there's lots of, this is a great athlete who has a lot of skills. Let's try and do as much as possible with him. And I think Lewis is a great example of that. And so in conversations that he had with the Chiefs, their message was exactly what he wanted to hear. And they were like, we have a history, and they do, and you've seen them do it over the years. We have a history of getting talented players the ball in space, where they can go and make plays for themselves and they can go and do great things and be and show what they have to offer. And I like to think that's what they're going to do with Lewis. I personally think he has a lot of upside as a kick returner, punt returner in the return game. And I think actually his experience playing fullback helps hugely with that. Fielding kicks, being at the back, like having a lot to manage. I think that's something that he could do sooner rather than later. And I'm hopeful he'll get an opportunity there. But then on the offensive side of the ball, I think they'll line him up as a running back. They'll line him up as a receiver. They line him up all over the formation and just try and get him the ball and try and get him in space, because there are players in today's NFL that do that already. So I don't think they have to really break the mold too much to set him up for that. And I think he's entering the league at a really good time for himself.
Yeah. Well, everyone's rooting for him. How have you felt with how it's been received? Like all positive? Have you seen the big rugby?
Yeah, I have seen a lot of the positives. I try not to spend too much of my time reading into it and trying to see what the temperature is. But I have seen a lot of positives, and I've had a lot of people, and certainly a lot of people that have reached out to me to talk about it have been really positive about it, and they think it's a great thing. And I think as well, however way this goes, and whatever your opinion of it is, I think there's something to be said for commending the unbelievable bravery that he showed in doing this. Because I said to him at the beginning of this thing, I said, there's no guarantee. Like, the NFL and the IPP has no ability to guarantee you a roster spot. You're going to do this. I said, you could be back in Cardiff in April. Like, know that now. And he said, I know that and I still want to give it a go.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, regardless of where you sit, you've got to give that its props and appreciate the bravery and the chance that he took. And I think it's a brilliant thing that's worked out for him.
Yeah. Well, we're all genuinely, anyone I've spoken to, who that matters, are buzzing for him. He was at Gloucester, which is my former team.
Mm.
My best mate was team manager there. He's tight with him as well. So everyone's absolutely buzzing for him. So the NFL's appetite in the UK, we've seen more games being played in London as well. Do you think we'll ever see a team? Is that the dream?
I wouldn't say no, wouldn't say yes. I mean, I can't. I mean,
it'd be awesome though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know whether.
I don't know
that
how
is.
That would work. I don't know how aesthetically it would
Neither
work.
Neither would I. Neither would I. I don't know how it would work. I think the NFL is at a really exciting point right now that we get to try out these loads of different things. Is it trying to find more international players? Is it in more international games? Is it something completely different that we haven't thought about yet? You know, and I think that the games. Fantastic. And it's been unbelievable to watch them grow, and that they're a real part of the sporting calendar in the UK now. There's a certain time of year where the NFL games come through, and I know in the not too distant past, people couldn't have even dreamed of having NFL regular season games outside of the US. It really gives us a platform to do so much more, which is a brilliant thing.
But that Tottenham Stadium's so cool. It's almost made for it. Out of all, I think it's the best stadium we've got in the UK. Just fit for purpose, cool, new. You know, the floor moves in and out. You can have concerts on there, like different sports. So out of all the stadiums, I think that it is the one, obviously.
Yeah,
we have
loads of NFL teams come out and say, I wish our stadium was like this. You know, it's class, it's quality. And we get, and because of the NFL's relationship with Tottenham, we get the ability to do more there. We run under-12 flag championships in that stadium, on that field. So these kids get to come out and have that experience. I said, like, we've run international combines where we've evaluated talent for the IPP on that field. So no, it's a fantastic venue.
Yeah. Just lastly, how does a man of 25 get into a position like yours? What's your backstory?
So I actually played American football in the UK for about 10 years. I played at a club level for the Kent Exiles, really fell in love with it then and was around some really brilliant people and kind of came up and was in it at a really good time. Loved the NFL, big fan. And then I got an opportunity as well to play for the Great Britain national team at U19, and I was part of the men's setup for a bit as well. And then got introduced kind of through that American football community to Adam Durdy and to Will Bryce, who were trying to get this thing off the ground at the time. And back then the IPP was a bit of an experimental, we really think there's something here, but we're trying to get everyone bought into it stage. So I did that. And I played quarterback. I threw the ball. That was my position.
Lovely.
So Adam was very, as he is, he was like, well, if you need work, I can give you work. He said that. He never paid me for any of it, but I'd just show up and I'd throw the ball. So when they worked out a player and they were looking at a player for the IPP, they needed him to catch balls, I'd be the one throwing them. So I'd meet them wherever, I'd do the workout. they'd get me lunch afterwards, I'd get the train home sort of thing. So I was actually working in a cinema at the time. Then Adam got the job with the Falcons, his first NFL coaching job. Will Bryce, who I worked with for a long time, was sort of drowning on his own for a little bit and said, hey, do you want to come in and interview? I did that. I got the role, and that was, yeah, almost 6 years ago now. And I've been doing it ever since then. Then as of this past year, kind of been in this seat. But it's brilliant. And to be honest, I think it's another reason I'm so passionate about it. I think I see myself as a product of the program just as much as the players sometimes. I'd never get the opportunity to work in this space or to have a career in this sport. And it's done such amazing things for me. So, we try and protect the program and enhance it however we can.
Yeah. Well, my mate's going to be listening to this and being like, he's got the dream job. I know getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and maybe the pressure's with it.
Yeah.
But I'm sat here with a smile on my face because I'm listening to it. And it's like the stories of the athletes as well, but people like you involved in that. It's just like it is an amazing story. Like such a cool industry to be a part of. And one of the things that we're trying to find in rugby, and we were talking about the green room chatting to Ben back there as well, and my agent, is them kind of culturally relevant touch points, you know, of how to grow the game and the people and the athletes and be comfortable to talk about money and jeopardy and, do you know what I mean, the ups and downs of being a man, which the NFL sport is predominantly, obviously on the field, but and being unapologetic about that. So I just love the fact, and I love what Zam's done and what Harry's done, and seeing the IPP stuff on social media and having no idea about how that works, but I love the fact that it's crossed into our game. I genuinely do, because I know that we've got some wonderful athletes, and Lewis and Harry and Wadey and Hayden, who I was at Saracens with as well, who played for the New York Jets, and Jordan, obviously don't know him personally, but seeing him, his story as well, that not that we want these best athletes to leave rugby, but I believe that playing a contact sport at the highest level in front of 50, 60, 70, 100,000 people week in, week out, warrants a certain value.
Yeah, I think bringing it back to Lewis as well, I think that the position that he's in, I think you have to acknowledge Gloucester's role in this as well. He's a product of that academy. Mm. He's a product of that program. And I know that he's so grateful for everything that he had in his time there and how much they helped him propel him into the athlete, but also the man and the professional that he is now. I've never met anyone in my life that can manage outside noise as well as Lewis.
Mm.
And credit to the setup and the places he's been before the IPP for that.
Yeah, and that's part of it, isn't it? Building a brand. And again, rugby haven't liked this at all. And so, yeah, big shout out to Gloucester, like Alex Brown, who I played with as well, like the CEO there, Ravo. All the players as well, because they're losing one of their best players. But one thing that you could always identify with Zam, with the white teeth, looks $1 million, you know, his drinks brand, that he gets it.
Yeah.
You know, he understands that the value is being athletic, which he's naturally gifted. God's gift has given him that, amongst other things. But having his brother, his dad, watching it and understanding that actually brand value is important. Maybe it is the PR side to it. It has huge value now. And it's, again, like younger people listen to this and having kids and managing that kind of social media profile that they all want. But you need to have the foundations of something for that to have real authenticity. And that's what Zam's got, right? So he understands that part of it, but he has got the heartbeat of what it is, and that is to be a great athlete.
Yeah, no, he gets it. And that's what I keep coming back to when people ask me about it is, it genuinely was such a privilege and will continue to be able to see him go to work every day. Because, and I said this to him at the very beginning of this process, you know, we love talking about the glitz and the glamour of the NFL, but life at the bottom of an NFL practice squad is not sexy. It's not like what you see on TV. Mm. And you have to be prepared for that. And our camp over at the IPP, for those who have seen it, it's hard, it's long, you have to be consistent. And you have to get good at doing quite monotonous things at a very high level every single day. And he just didn't falter. And I think for everything that comes with him in terms of he's got the look, he gets it, you know, he's now signed with the most star-studded franchise in the league at the moment. But he's done it the right way. And he's done it the right way every step of the way. And so, yeah, it was such a privilege to work with him. And we're so happy that he's kind of flying the IPP flag as well for us.
Yeah. And just on the IPP then, for people listening to this, if they're parents, if they're coaches, if they're young athletes, How do they go about it? So they listen to you. I'm sold.
Yeah.
Like genuinely, I'm so excited. And maybe it's because I can see the pathway.
Mm.
It's unfolding in front of us. But if there is genuine interest from people, how do they get involved? How do they find their way into the system?
So in terms of actually us getting eyes on people, we did actually open up an email address, which at some point I'm going to have to sift through. But ipp@nfl.com.
Simple as that.
So sending over, this is who I am, this is my age, height, weight, my sporting history. Here's some film of me being an athlete. And I've done this in the past with players who don't have any film of them playing American football. And I'll just say, well, just what kind of athlete are you? What can I do? And you get sent videos of people pushing cars up the road and people jumping on boxes the height of the door and doing all these things and or dunking a basketball and showing that they're an athlete, you know, and just trying to get that initial conversation going. This is the history of sport that I have, and getting in touch with us that way. And really on top of that, it's just starting that process of getting involved in the game, watching it, kind of getting an understanding of what this is. Because as much as, again, we keep bringing it back to him, but as much as Lewis's fan view of the game was great, he had to relearn it when he got to us anyway. But having a foundation really helped him.
Yeah. And then what about the future of the IPP?
I think better and better athletes, more and more athletes. We're undoubtedly at a position now where NFL clubs look at this as a viable source of talent. And so we have to live up to that. And with the beauty of what we do is that we set our own standards year on year. And we're very happy with how the class of 24 has gone and how it will continue to go. But it's set a very high bar for the class of 25.
Mm.
But that's exactly where we want to be. We want that to be the case. We kind of want to intimidate ourselves with our own expectations and our own standards. So, yeah, more athletes, better athletes. And we want starting players in the NFL to be IPP graduates.
Yeah. Well, how cool that you're part of their journey, you know, and Zam's journey and sharing the stories of Travis and these other guys in there. It's
yeah,
wicked. I'm so glad that we rounded the wagons and the horses to get in the studio, because I think the listeners, and just getting some real context on what Lewis has been through, you know, what opportunities are there available in under such with the biggest sporting brand in the world, which is the NFL. So James, absolutely loved it, mate, as you could tell.
Yeah, no, as did I. Thanks for having me on.
Wicked.